Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
All right, so picking up where we left off last week, which by the way, where did we leave off last week? What was the last week's topic about? Yeah, I don't even know why I get up here and why you even come. Yeah, it was really good. I appreciate that, though. Yeah, it meant a lot. We talked about it on the way home, and then we decided we weren't going to ever talk about it ever again because we want to move on. Well, last week actually was about commitment. If you happen to remember, it was about commitment and about how that's at the core of our relationship. And we talked about a covenant relationship versus a consumer relationship, and how marriage at its core is a covenant relationship. It should not be a consumer mentality where we only are in it for what we can get out of it. And once we start getting as much out of it as we're putting into it, then we look to cut bait and run and move somewhere else. But really, marriage is a covenant relationship. And to build on that, one of the greatest ways you can say, I love you, is just to look them in the eye and say, I'm committed to you. I'm committed to you. And it's kind of love with teeth. It's love with action. And it's saying, it's not just I love you like I love pizza. I'm committed to you in a way that I will never be committed to pizza. I am committed to you through thick and thin. And however, since we're talking about family lies, these are lies we believe. And when we believe a lie, we suffer the consequences. And one of the lies we often believe about marriage is that simply commitment is really all that God asks of us. I'm not saying that God doesn't ask a commitment of us, but commitment's kind of only the starting point. It's only the baseline. And oftentimes we convince ourselves that, well, I'm a good husband. Oh, I'm a good wife because I stayed committed. And sometimes we even look down rather judgmentally and with disdain on those who were not able to stay married. And they went down the road of divorce and said, well, I've kept my commitment unlike others who have failed. And so we think we're somehow better than other people. But God's standard, believe it or not, is not commitment. It's actually much beyond commitment. It's loyalty is where God's standard is. Now, if you were to ask the two bozos in that movie, are you a good husband? Well, yeah, my wife even said I was. Remember, she patted me on the head and said, he's not a gawker, he's a good boy. And be like, yeah, we're good husbands. Or if you ask the other one who got caught, he'd say, well, yeah, I look, but I don't touch. Nothing wrong with window shopping, right? I mean, it's not like I'm actually going to go in and make a purchase. It's not like I'm actually going to go do anything that would dishonor my... I'm going to stay committed. And so we think that because we've stayed committed, not only are we doing everything God asks us, we're actually pretty proud of the fact that we're doing everything God asks us. But if you were to take those same two guys and not ask them if they're committed, but ask them rather, are you loyal? Are you loyal? Or better yet, if you were to ask their wives, is he loyal? What do you think they would say? I mean, obviously, that's what she had a problem with. And I didn't put all the clips in there, but if you go to the next scene in the movie, they get home, she's laying in bed, and she fakes like she's sleeping because she just doesn't want to interact with them. I mean, she just can't bring herself to have a conversation with him because she's been so hurt deep down inside because he's looked somewhere else and he's going to somewhere outside of the marriage. He's still committed, but he's going outside of the marriage for some sense of fulfillment. And so it cuts her to the core. And loyalty is a very old concept that has been important throughout centuries for healthy relationships. It's key. It's quintessential to healthy relationships. Going back to Cicero in ancient Rome, who was known as the greatest orator of Rome, he observed about 2,000 years ago that the quality to look out for as a warrant for the stability and permanence of a friendship is loyalty. The quality to look out for that is a symbol of stability and permanence in a relationship is loyalty. And it says nothing that lacks loyalty can ever be stable. And so we see that loyalty is a cornerstone of stability, but it's also the cornerstone of great dramas. And when we watch our Greek, if you're going back to the Greeks with their plays all the way into modern times, the quickest way to figure out who the villain is someone who betrays. The villain is someone who cannot be trusted. The villain is one who only cares about themselves, and going to sell at anybody and everybody, and they have no sense of loyalty to anything other than themselves and to their own greed, their own power, and their own lust. And conversely, though, a hero of the story is one who is loyal even at great cost to themselves. And they're loyal to a cause, or they're loyal to a country, or they're loyal to their morals or their principles or their values. I mean, if you go to Mel Gibson, for instance, and he's in The Patriot, and we love him in The Patriot because he's loyal to his country. He's loyal to his homeland, above and beyond England and anybody else, and anything else he would have to give up is okay. He loses part of his own family for the cause. And you go to another movie like Braveheart, where Mel Gibson is now loyal to Scotland, and he's loyal to the girl that he loves. And so it's because of the girl he loves and his loyalty and his love for her that he fights for Scotland. And I don't even do a very good accent, but he does it like that and just sticks with you. And maybe he was from Australia. I don't know. And then you can go same Mel Gibson, but you can go his loyalty to God. And when he makes a movie about Jesus and everybody else is attacking him for it, he says, I'm going to do it anyway. And then he cleans out with about $500 million cash on the profit of that, which is pretty cool. I think he deserved it for the very fact that he stuck to it and Hollywood wouldn't support it. But he says, I'm going to stay true to what it is I feel God's called me to do. And so he makes a movie in Aramaic of all things, which how on earth that does not win an Oscar for acting, I don't know. I mean, if you can pull off the role of Jesus convincingly, I'd say you pulled something off. But anyways, moving on. So we look to, loyalty is a test that we use in our dramas. It's a test we use in our relationships to know if something's legit or not, and is real or not. And not only does it show the sign and health of our relationship with the person, but it actually reflects our health of relationship with God. And if you go to the quintessential verse on relational loyalty, you go back to Malachi chapter 2. Malachi is the very last book of the Old Testament. If you're Italian, you might pronounce it Malachi, but it's actually Malachi if you go with the Hebrew pronunciation. If you read that, you'll figure out the joke. So Malachi chapter 2, picking up in verse 13, it says, and here's another thing you all do. He's in the concept, or he's in the context of God's like, you want to know what's ticking me off right now? I'll tell you another thing that you do that ticks me off. He says, you cover my altar with tears and weeping and groaning, but I don't pay any attention to your offerings, and I don't accept them with pleasure. Okay, so oftentimes people say, the reason why I don't like church is because a bunch of hypocrites. Well, if you don't like church because a bunch of hypocrites are there, just know that the feeling is mutual between you and God. He doesn't like them either. It's almost like as if he's saying, I hear you singing, but I'm really not enjoying it. And I don't really care about the quality of your voice. It's the quality of your heart. When your heart's nasty on the inside, I really don't care. I mean, you can sing like April sings, but I don't care if your heart's all jacked up. I don't want to listen to it. Like, I don't accept it with pleasure. I'm like, yeah, thanks. That's kind of how God looks at it. And he says, here's what it is. You cry out, how come the Lord doesn't accept my worship? Well, I'll tell you why. Because the Lord has witnessed the vows that you made to your wife when you were young, but you have been disloyal to her. Though she's remained your faithful partner, the wife of your marriage vows. And he says, wait a second here. Didn't the Lord make you one with your wife, and body and spirit you're his? So what does he want? He wants godly children union, and he wants you to guard your heart and remain loyal to the wife of your youth. We talked last week about commitment, about how marriage is a different relationship than a boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, because in boyfriend-girlfriend relationships, you can break up whenever you want, and really nobody can call you into question for that. However, when it comes to a marriage relationship, what you're doing is you're inviting your friends and your family to come in and witness this promise that you're going to make. And if you ask a pastor to come in, you're not only asking your friends and family to hold you accountable to this commitment, you're asking God to hold you accountable to this commitment. You're saying, God, I want you to bless this union. I want this done before you, and I want you to be a part of this. Even if you didn't go to a pastor, and at some point you've said, God, I want you to be the Lord over this marriage, and we make our vows before you, and this is a marriage we want you to uphold. God says, I'll uphold that. And there's consequences for you going outside of that. If you're not going to be loyal to your wife, then you and I have a problem here. Because I'm not going to let you just continue to do that and act like there's no big deal, act like I don't have a problem with it. I have a serious problem when you're acting disloyal towards your mate. When you think about what loyalty is, loyalty is an extension of once you take ownership of something. Loyalty extends out when you take, and it's very crucial to the husband-wife relationship. For instance, let me go to some other examples. You think about things that people are loyal to. Like they're loyal to the school that they went to. I mean, there's some of y'all out there that are just absolute sycophantically loyal to your school. And I'm not going to call out Bobby, Pastor Bobby on this, but I'm just saying there are some out there. I won't name any names, but some of you are so deathly loyal to your own school that you have a problem with geography maps now. You can't even refer to the state that's north of you as its name. You just have to call it the team up north. Or the state up north. He thinks that the M word is a cuss word. I mean, literally will not even go there. And a couple years back, I thought it was funny. I have a friend of mine who had a Michigan shirt on, and he's about the same build that Bobby is. And so I took a shot I had of Pastor Bobby on my phone, and I put it on my computer, and I did some Photoshop work. And I'm not as good as Alex is with Photoshop, but I've got some skills. And so I photoshopped his head on the Michigan t-shirt guy and then posted it on Facebook. And you could just bet everybody was having a field day with him. Well, he comes in and he is hot. I mean, he is hopping mad hot. Like, I mean, you'd almost have thought I had just desecrated and said something horrible about his wife. I mean, it was just like, you don't mess with Don, and a close number two is you don't mess with my team either. It's close. I know Don still gets number one, but it's a close two right there. Because we're fear. Why? Because that's his team. And I joke with him. It's like, you didn't even go to the school. It was just near your house. That's it. But it doesn't matter. It's still his school. It's his baby. And he's in Ohio State. He bleeds red is what he says. I don't know if that makes sense biologically, but he says he bleeds red because of Ohio State. I don't know. I go with it. You guys are fiercely loyal to teams that even stink. Redskins, right? I mean, I'm sorry. You have one good year and you have a lot of good history, but Dan Snyder doesn't know how to run a team. And yet every year, preseason comes, you go 0-4 and you're like, last time we won a Super Bowl, we went 0-4 in the preseason. This can be our year. Every year is your year. But, you know, what's the Redskins motto? Wait till next year, right? I mean, you love it because they're your team. You say, they're my team. I don't care if they stink. They're my team. We take ownership of it. And never is there a situation where we take more ownership of something when it comes to our spouse, where God says, this is bone of your bone and flesh of your flesh. And you say, that's my woman. That's my man. That's my wife. When you take possession, ownership, not in a possessive, destructive sort of, don't let sinful ideas of this enter in. In the same way you take possession of that team. That's my team. That's my school. You say, that's my woman. That should imply, therefore, a psychological loyalty, a psychological union that intertwines their success with your success and their future with your future. Because after all, when your team wins a national championship, just saying, you know, when you actually are associated with and have aligned yourself with and actually attended the school that won the national championship, just saying, yes, I did go to Florida State, and it feels good. And I walk into the office after winning the national championship, and I have a certain sense of confidence that I feel. A certain sense that I'm better than everybody else in the room simply because my team won. Now I haven't done anything personally, but yet just because the team that I support wins, I have a sense of pride, and I enjoy walking in and watching Pastor Alex and Pastor Bobby hang their head in shame at the very fact that my team, my boys, have won the national championship. And all they've done ever since is talk to me about crab legs. And I don't want to hear it. You can talk about crab legs all you want with some of y'all know what that joke is all about. That's okay if you don't. Probably better that you don't. But that's all they're talking about is crab legs. Hey, crab legs all you want. Nash championship. And I take great pride because my team won. The same should be reflected in your marriage. That when they win, it's okay if she makes more money than you. Know why? Because it all goes in the same bank account. You win. When she succeeds, you win. When he succeeds, you win. Your pride and your joy. And here's the funny thing. What's crazy though is we often seem more loyal to our team, to our school, than we are to our spouse. We're often more loyal to our team and to our school than we are to our spouse. What do I mean by that? Most of y'all would never talk bad about your team or about your school, yet why do we talk bad about our wife? Why do we talk bad about our husband? We do that. It just comes out. We don't think about how disloyal that is. And this passage here talks about, so guard your heart to remain loyal to the wife of your youth. Guard your heart. Anybody know why the world's largest concentration of military personnel happens to be right here in our hometown? Anybody know historically or strategically why that is? Anyone? Start here, but why would it start here? Why is this a good place to put a huge military institution, especially a Navy institution? Okay, the ocean's there, yeah, because it's better to put a Navy institution in Virginia Beach than it would be over in Bristol, Virginia. I agree. That's smart thinking there. But why Norfolk? Why not New York City? Why not Florida? Why Norfolk? centrally located, but if you go to the West Coast, I mean, they got their major base down in San Diego. It's not really central on the West Coast. But why would you put it here, of all places, on the East Coast? Large, anybody? Anyone? Well, here's the thing. If you pull out a map sometime, if you were to sail your boat from any one of our foreign enemies over across the Atlantic and cruise into the Chesapeake and take a right and head north, and then eventually take a left and hit up the Potomac, you know, you could park your vessel about 100 yards off the Lincoln Memorial. Believe it or not, our waterway right here guards the entrance to the capital of our nation. So it makes a lot of sense that historically, strategically, that you would put as many guns, boats, ships, forts, whatever, right here. Because this is guarding the entrance to that which is most precious to your nation, to the heart of your nation. You're guarding the entrance by guarding this area. So some of you are like, I don't know why I'm in Norfolk. Well, I'll tell you why you're in Norfolk. Because as far as crazy it would seem that anybody could ever get in now, go back a couple hundred years ago. You know, yeah, you're going to want to make sure you put all your guns right here, because if they get past here, they can just cruise right up the river and end up right off the coast of, I mean, could you imagine having a battleship parked right out behind the Lincoln Memorial and just lobbing stuff all through the Washington Mall? You don't want that. You're going to make sure they never get anywhere close to that. So it says guard your heart. Guard, don't let anything get down into your heart where disloyalties can get lodged. So how is it we guard our heart? Well, it begins with our mouth. We guard our mouth. We watch the things that we say. We're careful about the things we say about our spouse. And I'm amazed. I mean, it even happens like in the context of small groups, the stuff that comes out sometimes about husbands or about wives. And they'll just be sitting there and just sharing jokingly, oh yeah, yeah. The other day, Bill, he was trying to fix a medicine cabinet at the house. And I tell you, he's such a tool. He doesn't even know which piece of the tool did he use. I mean, he wouldn't even know which was the right side of the hammer. He doesn't know the difference between a hammer and a screwdriver. Yeah, oh no, Ted's going to go in there. Bill's going to go in there, fix up the medicine cabinet. Oh. Well, you know, I had to come in there, take the whole thing out. I had to do it myself. I'm not a construction worker, but I'm better than he is. And you're listening, you're laughing, you're kind of going along with it. Yeah, that's funny. Or then, you know, he says, well, you know, the other day we're out at this country western bar. And my wife comes back and she says, are girls football or baseball? I'm like, girls football or baseball? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. Whatever you like. I'm like, no. I got to know. Are girls football or baseball? Because the restrooms say Colts and Phillies. And I'm not sure which one to go in. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? And like, on the one hand, like, you're giving her brownie points for knowing that the Colts is a football team and the Phillies is a baseball team, but you're really telling everybody in the whole room, my wife's an idiot. She doesn't know that Colts are the males and the Phillies are the girls. She doesn't. She's too stupid to figure that out. Isn't that funny? Isn't it funny how stupid my wife is? Let's all make fun of her. Let's all laugh at how dumb she is. Oh, it all got quiet all of a sudden in here, right? But we do that. We're conditioned to do that by the TV shows we watch, the movies we watch, the books that we read. I mean, year after year, my kids are just now starting into the whole young Disney TV shows where all they do is basically make fun of each other all morning long. And then they graduate from that into the sitcoms with adults. And what do the adult sitcoms do? They just run each other into the ground. They have to, I mean, has there been a marriage since the Cosbys where they lifted each other up? I can't think of a TV marriage where the two people lifted each other up. It's just run to the ground, make fun of each other, put each other down. And you'll count them. You'll count at least 10 to 50 put downs per married couple every time you watch a sitcom. That's just pretty much what it's all about. It's almost like you have to go to some police drama where people get shot and killed just to have some sort of positive relationship between a husband and wife. I'm serious. It's the only way you can have a positive relationship, because everything else, we just condition ourselves to put each other down. But that strikes a chord at unity. You'd never put your team down like that. You'd never put your school down like that. Yet for some reason, when it comes to our spouse, we put our spouse down. It's even crazy. We actually talk better about our friends often than we do about our spouse. You'd never put down your friends the way that you do your spouse. Something about the closeness of the relationship, we put them down. Or if we don't do it publicly, sometimes we just spend a lot of our free time complaining about our spouse to our friends. Worst yet is where you complain about your spouse to members of the opposite sex. And you start doing that, and you're going down a road of disloyalty. Eventually, that leads to adultery. It just does. I mean, the road of disloyalty leads to adultery every single time because I'm allowing my heart to be disloyal to my wife. And when I separate myself in disloyalty, eventually I'm setting myself up to get myself on a path that's going to go down a road I don't ever want to get to. So there's things we say. You also need to put a guard on your eyes. We put a guard on our mouth. Another thing we need to guard with the same kind of fortification that we put here in Norfolk, we need to guard our eyes. Job chapter 31, verse 1, Job says, I made a covenant with my eyes not to look upon a young woman lustfully. I made a covenant with my eyes. I'm not going to look. You know, if some girl with cleavage bends over, I'm looking the other way. I'm not looking that direction. I'm going to guard my eyes. You know, some girl who's probably going to have a nice rear end walks by, I'm not doing the whole head turn sort of thing. And we laugh when he's like, oh, was that rude? I hope she didn't see me. You know, actually, I get questions every once in a while about why we do things the way we do it here at church. And one of the questions you get asked about is about why do we dim the lights? Is it for stage effect? Is it for theater effect? Because everything else you do seems to be that you don't really put a lot of emphasis on show or performance. So why do you set it sort of up like a concert hall? Why is that like the one showy sort of feel element of the service? It had nothing to do with the show aspect of it because we really, you know, seek to be authentic in our expressions of worship. But the reason why we dim the lights is because for years and years and years, I went to church and would watch. I mean, I did it back in the day, and would watch the other guy's room. Guys would just sit there and look at girls' behinds. Seriously, you'd be like, yeah, praise Jesus. Uh-huh, yeah, yeah, what's up? Hey, yeah, Jesus. Yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. You're doing that when you're, and God's like, seriously? Seriously. You're going to sing praises to me while you're looking at her caboose. Really, that's how, and you think I'm enjoying this. I don't accept it with pleasure, is what God says. I'm not enjoying that. And so when we would set the dimmer, I used to go back to the sound booth. What I would do is I would go and I'd look for a silhouette of somebody, and I'd just pull it down until I couldn't make out any detail. That's straight up truth. That's how I set the lights when we first started to get the pattern of where we would go. I would go back there, just look at any silhouette and just pull it down. Perfect. Can't make out anything. That's perfect right there. Because I don't want you looking around the room. I don't want you looking at anybody else. I'm going to try. If you can't guard your eyes, I'll help you with it. I can control that here. I can control it here. I can't control it everywhere else you go. You got to do that. But I'm going to make sure I try to create an environment where that doesn't happen. And so you got to guard your eyes. You got to guard the things you put in it. And this goes for guys as well as girls. Of course, everybody knows that guys are very visual oriented. But I've told you in the past about like movies like Labor Day or The Holiday, which I call porn for women. Oh, there's nothing wrong with it. Nothing. They don't show anything. Yeah, it's just some guy who spends his whole life doing chores around the house, baking apple pies, doing all the honey-do list, looks amazing in a white t-shirt and takes it off quite frequently, and then gives her a pedicure. I don't know how he even learned how to do a pedicure, but he does it anyway. And you're just thinking, well, that's a man right there. I'm like, no, that's one of your girlfriends. That's what that is. That's not a man. He's no more a real man than the porno star is a real woman. I'm sorry. That girl can't have kids. She doesn't clean the house. She doesn't know how to make a dinner. She doesn't know how to provide. She doesn't know how to nurture. She doesn't know how to care. All she knows how to do is look like that with a surgically enhanced body and nothing else. And she is ugly to the core on the inside. And it ain't any different from one to the other. And if you look upon that, you're not going to enjoy and appreciate what it is that you have and that disloyalty. It's kind of like, anybody ever watched Survivor? I hear the most recent episode just, and I haven't watched it in a while. I used to have somebody who watched it, so I'd sit down and watch it. And I always laugh. I have a marketing background. I always would laugh about the product placements they would put in there. And I always thought to myself, is this really helping the brand out to put a product placement in the midst of Survivor? You know how they would do it, like, in the middle of the game, about after people have been out there about 30 days, and they're all looking like the pictures at a National Geographic from a starving country because all they've been eating is, you know, a few grains of rice for, you know, one meal a day kind of thing. And they're just absolutely starving to the point where you see the rib cage and like that. And Jeff Probst walks out and he's like, all right, what we're playing for today is a thing of Pringles. Pringles, new flavor and baked in pizza crunch. Pringles. And you're like, oh my gosh, Pringles? Oh, just the thought of Pringles. Pringles would be amazing. Oh, that'd be amazing. Oh. And so then they win it. And they're like, oh, can you taste salt? Oh, this flavor is amazing. And they're just like devouring the thing, right? Pringles, it tastes that good. Well, yeah, if you give a beggar a crust of bread, it's going to seem that good, sure. Why don't you do a little on-site thing, go over to Golden Corral Feeding Trough, catch people walking out of there, and if they love your Pringles, then maybe I'll buy some. Right? Yeah, how likely are you going to get the same reaction as somebody who's just gorged themselves for an hour and a half at the buffet? Not likely, right? Well, if you feasted your eyes on the buffet of flesh all day long at the restaurant you go to, at the church you attend, the place where you work, how much are you going to enjoy what it is that your husband or your wife has to offer when you come home at the end of the day? Versus the person who says, I'm going to starve myself. I'm going to starve my eyes. I'm going to make a covenant with my eyes. I'm not going to look upon anything else. When I say, honey, I only have eyes for you, I really mean I only have eyes for you. I will look away and look away and look away and look away. And I want at the end of the day to be mentally like those contestants on Survivor. But honey, when I see you, I literally go, wow. Because you're the only body I look at. You're the only man I look at. You're the only one I take notice of. And I don't have anything else to compare you to. Only thing I compare you to is to you. I only have eyes for you. And the relationship that results from that kind of loyalty is amazing. But it takes a covenant of the eyes to get there. And so you got to guard your eyes and what you look at. Also, in the same respect, you got to guard your body and what you allow other people to look at. And this goes for guys and for girls. With girls, I mean, it's you know, you see this quite evidently. What ends up happening is the affection and attention of your man isn't enough for you. You got to get the attention and affection of every man you see. You got to have every guy look at you. You got to have every guy. You want to be the girl who walks by and has a married man turn his head and look at you. And you're like, uh-huh, that's right. I got it. I do. You know, Beyonce would say, let me upgrade you. Let me upgrade you. Why? Because that. Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me? I'm just saying, this is the way it is. We listen to this stuff. We're like, yeah. And so it pushes us to want to crave the attention and affection of every guy out there. Because I don't feel as though I matter, I worth, or I'm pretty. Unless every guy in the world says so. And honey, what you say about me is not enough for me. I got to have everybody say it to me. And that's disloyal. It should be the kind of thing where it says, honey, you know, I bought a bathing suit, but it's only to wear in our swimming pool for you. Like, yeah, I like the sound of that. What she's saying is, I don't want any other guy to see my body. Now, I'm not advocating Middle Eastern culture. I'm not saying it's wise. But if you lived in a society where women actually wore like the black ghost outfit every day, look like Casper the Black Ghost, you know what I'm talking about, over in Middle East. I think they call him a burqa. At the very least, if the only woman that guy can see is his wife at home, I got to at least say this. He probably feasts and indulges on his wife's beauty in a way that nobody in this room ever could. If she's the only woman he's ever seen more than just the wrists and the toes of, and the eyes of. I think they cover up the monobrow when they do that little thing. But if that's the only one, sorry, I'm making fun of it. Anyways, moving on, all right. If that's the only woman he's seen, would feast her eyes in a different way. And here's the thing, guys aren't immune to this. Because I've seen guys primping when the pretty girl's coming over. They're married, but they're still primping for it. I remember when I first went out on a date, started dating this girl. I had just come out of Maryville, in the land of singlehood. And she was talking about how people who live in Maryville is like people who are all married. It's like the land of people who are married. So people who live in Maryville don't know how to dress. It's like they got off the fashion train and these guys just dress like absolute goobers. I mean, the jeans that they wear are, you know, out of style. The shirts that they wear are all baggy. It's like baggy clothing. Come on, seriously. It's just goober. And it was funny because I started laughing. I started thinking about it. And it's like, you know, well, some of that may be intentional. You've ever read Stephen Arterburn's book, Every Man's Battle? He talks in there about strategies to avoid relationship problems, strategies to avoid affairs. And one of the strategies he promotes is dress like a goober when you go to work. I mean, are you really there to dress to impress all the ladies at work? Are you there to dress to impress all the men at work? Or do you only want your husband or only want your wife looking at you? And he actually, you know, espouses, you know, walking into work like this is okay. It's good. On a youth mission trip once, we were in downtown Atlanta. And I got to tell you, we get off the bus and we're in like a dangerous inner city part of Atlanta. And I'm giving the speech on the bus. I'm like, all right, kids, you got to stay right with me. By the way, there were other youth around, other kind of younger people around, but we were kind of in downtown area. I said, listen, y'all need to stay right with me. You cannot, you know, far away. We'd be really safe. All right, let's go. And I start walking down the street like this, and the kids are like, what? I can't walk next to him, but I don't want to, you know, be near him. So I had fun. Anyways, moving on. That's a little rabbit story. But you should say, I don't care if every girl in the world thinks I'm a goober, as long as my wife knows what's up. And honey, I'll look the part for you. And I'll show you my muscles, and I'll show you my body. And I'll comb my hair for you. But I don't care if I look like the Nutty Professor when I go to work. I really don't. And vice versa. If your wife's, you know, you're like, you're going to wear that? Yep. I only save the good stuff for you, sweetie. I don't care what the men at my work think. If they think I'm the ugliest girl in the world, I'm fine with that. Doesn't matter to me. I'm saving what I got for you. And inside you'll be like, right? Right. Because that's loyalty, and you love the loyalty. So let me ask you this, kind of think about this. How many of y'all would say that our country has a problem with loyalty? Anyone? Loyalty? How many of y'all would say that you have a problem with loyalty? Yeah. So it's basically a problem everybody else has. I don't have the problem, but people around me, like you have it, I don't, right? You all have it, I don't. It's funny that the Ipsos did a, I don't know who Ipsos is, I just read the stats to make sure it was a legit study. They found that 40% of Americans view themselves as being extremely loyal people. However, only 25% came back and said, I know of other people who are loyal. So almost half of America says, I'm loyal. But only 25% says other people are loyal, which kind of reflects, actually, that's a better statistic than we found in here. It was like 100% I'm loyal, 100% you're not. Okay, whatever. And here's the reality of this. Loyalty is very difficult to see, if not impossible to see in the mirror. We always look at ourselves through rose, you know, stained glass, what are they called? Rose-colored glasses, rose stained glass, there's some saying like that that sounds good. Anyways, we all look at ourselves a lot better than we really are. So much so, you see this reflected with Peter and Jesus. When Peter and Jesus are there at the Last Supper, Jesus says, listen, here's what's going to go down over the next couple of days. Tonight, I'm going to get arrested, and then they're going to try me, and then they're going to crucify me. I'm going to be killed on behalf of you all, and you guys are all going to run away. And Peter's like, I don't know about the rest of these yahoos I'm dealing with here, but I'm not going anywhere. Jesus, I'm here to stay. I mean, I'll die for you. I'll lay down my life for you. If they're going to come to you, they got to go through me. Peter basically saying, I'm the most loyal person in this room. There's no way I'm walking away. And Jesus is like, yeah, you will. Matter of fact, you're going to deny me 3 times before tomorrow morning. Not me. Nope. I'm loyal. Everybody else isn't. Everybody else at this table, they're not loyal. We got a problem loyalty at the table, but it's not with me. Sure enough, you know how the scene plays out. He's even dissing Jesus just for the sake of a little girl. Wakes up the next morning, realizes what happened. Because loyalty is very difficult to see in the mirror. Second thing about loyalty, though, it's proven by what we do, not by what we say. It's proven by how we live, not by the things we say. And Jesus comes to him the next time he sees him. And he's like, yeah, we kind of messed up there, didn't we? He's like, yeah. And the whole story plays out in John chapter 21. And the whole thrust of this story in John chapter 21 is Jesus eventually says, listen, I know you messed up. I know you said you were loyal, but you really weren't. But you will prove to be loyal by what you do. Because there will come a day when you are led to a place you don't want to be led to, and you will do the things that you don't want to do, and you will lay down your life for me, and everybody will know of your loyalty. And to this day, we know that Peter was crucified. On behalf of Jesus, he was crucified actually upside down. I feel like he was even worthy to be crucified in the same manner as his Lord and Savior. And so it proves out, yeah, he's known to be loyal by what he does. And in there, he gives insight to what loyalty is all about and the heart of why loyalty is so hard. Loyalty is so hard because it challenges our loyalties. And what I mean by that is who am I most loyal to? Me. Remember 2 weeks ago, I talked about the number one problem in marriage is selfishness. So we have a problem with selfishness. We need to be committed beyond commitment. We need to have loyalty. reason why we have a problem with loyalty is because I'm more loyal to myself than I am to you. Peter was more interested in saving his own skin than he was standing up for his friend. He says, I know that, but you'll work through that. You'll become a loyal person. There'll come a day when you'll willingly go and die on my behalf. And you'll show your loyalty by how you live out. So if loyalty cannot be seen by ourselves, and is proven by what we do, not what we say, then I have an assignment for you if you choose to accept it. And whenever I give my men's groups these assignments, they always look at me and go, you tell us how that works out, and we'll see if we're going to do it next week. Because your assignment is to go to the person in your life that knows you best. If you're married, be your spouse. If you're not, then it could be a parent or a friend. And simply ask the question, am I loyal to you? Have I proven to be loyal to you? Am I more loyal to you than I am to the kids? Am I more loyal to you than I am to my job? Am I more loyal to you than I am to other women? Am I more loyal to you than I am to other men? Am I more loyal to you than I am my hobbies? Am I more loyal to you than I am my sports team? Am I more loyal to you than I am to my friends? Do you feel as though I have been loyal in my relationship? Not committed. Don't worry about commitment right now. Just, do you feel like I am loyal? Now, that's the kind of question you only go into if you're willing to have the conversation. And you got to have a thick skin. Remember, marriage is going to pull out the worst in you because the worst needs to get out of you. And that may very well be the kind of question that pulls some things to the surface that they've been feeling and they've been hurting. But here's the thing. You don't have a right relationship unless you can talk about these things. We would all say, I want to have a loyal spouse, and I want to be a loyal spouse. And you're never going to change if you think you're doing everything right. Maybe you need to have that conversation. It's going to be a hard day and a hard night, but you get through that, and a year from now, you have a track record of showing loyalty, you'll be in a much better place in your relationship with your spouse, and according to the text, what it says here in Malachi chapter 2, you'll have a much better relationship with God too. Would you join with me as we close? Father, as we think about loyalty, it's something we often overlook and don't put much attention to. So, Father, forgive us for believing that. Forgive us for believing that we're doing everything you want us to do simply because we're committed. But, Father, this morning, your Spirit's already been working on us. It's not the word. It's not my words, God. I know it's your Spirit that speaks. And it's convicting us of the things that we've done that have been disloyal. And Father, may this very day, may we make a change. May we confess our disloyalty to our partner. May we confess our disloyalty to you. Father, may we put up a hedge of protection around our eyes, around our mouth, around our body. That we might guard our heart and guard this relationship. Put it as a supreme priority in our life. Father, may I not look to the affections or admiration of anyone else other than the one that you've provided for me. May I not look to be fulfilled or satisfied by gazing upon or thinking about or fantasizing about anyone else other than the one that you've provided for me. May I be both loyal in my thoughts and my actions. In Jesus' name, amen. Communion that we share every Sunday is a testament to the amazing loyalty God has to us. Back when the relationship between us and God first started was back in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, God had this great relationship, and they were like one, and Adam and Eve, of course, broke that relationship, and God reached out, killed an animal, provided animal skins for him. As you see the play out over history. Eventually, God has this relationship with Abraham that reflects that same idea. And they make this promise, they make this covenant vow between each other that I'll be your God and you'll be my people. And if either one of us fails in this, it'll be our death. Of course, we in humanity fail over and over and over again at this. And God's so loyal, he doesn't say, well, I'm going to go to another planet, another solar system, look for somebody else who can do a better job. He's so loyal to us. He says, no, I don't want to see you hurt. I'll die in your place. So he comes down here to live among us and give his life up for us. we share in communion, what we're reminding ourselves of is the amazing loyalty that God has to us. And some of you may be very hurt because of disloyalty in your life. You begin to wonder and say, what's the point? Because the one I love has been disloyal to me. Communion is a reminder to you that the loyalty you've been craving and longing for has been given to you. It's been given to you by God alone. And we, in turn, seek to show that same loyalty to others because of what God's done for us. Mass Alex will come back out to lead us in worship. And for you this morning, as you come forward to receive communion, the idea is you'll come forward, you'll tear off a piece of bread to be reminded of that Jesus Christ, his body was broken for you on the cross. He died for your sin, for mine. That it was his body that was broken, not yours. Because of God's great love for you and his loyalty to you. Even though we're not worthy of it. And we take that, we dip it in the cup, which it's reminded his blood was shed for us as a cleansing, as a covering for us. And that God no longer sees you for your mistakes, he sees you as innocent and pure. So we invite each and every one of you to come up and to receive this wonderful gift as a sign and a symbol of the salvation that God has offered to us through Jesus Christ. Others, you may have something on your mind you just want to pray at the altar about, maybe make confession before God up here at his altar. Others, you may just want somebody to pray with, and Pastor James and myself will be up here to pray. If you want to pray to receive Christ as your Savior, if you just want to pray about something else in your life for healing or for God's touch in your life, just come forward. We'll be here with you to pray. The others, you may just need to stay right where you're at and just listen to the words of the song Alex is going to lead us in. Whatever God's put upon your heart to do, I just ask that you come and respond.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.